Ready?
Yep.
Well, welcome to Rebel Storytellers Podcast 002. My name is Brad, and this time, I'm going to hit record.
Hi, Brad. My name is Steve. Should we tell everyone what just happened?
Can you do it in 2 seconds or less?
No. We just recorded our entire podcast, and my good friend Brad over here actually did not hit the record button.
Sure.
And so here we are recording the entire thing again. So if it's not very good, I promise that the first take was amazing.
Oh, best we've ever done.
It was unbelievable. So here we go.
I can confirm that the numbers are rolling, so we are
excellent.
Recording.
Here we go.
So Rebel Storytellers is a community of thinkers, writers, motivators, and thought leaders devoted to sparking hope and action in the world, particularly for people who feel stuck and want more for their lives.
And in the month of November, if you guys have been on rebelstorytellers.com, you've noticed that we've just begun our four-letter words. The month of November, the word is home. And so what's happening every weekday in November, 20 different storytellers are sharing 20 different perspectives of the word home through art, music, poetry, fiction, essays, on and on and on. We decided on home for November, obviously because Thanksgiving, a lot of us will go back home or have people into our homes, family, friends, all that good stuff. Every month, the word is going to change. And so we're already working on what December is going to be. We're pretty excited about that. January, February, on and on and on. So check rebelstorytellers.com every weekday to see that unique perspective of the word home.
Can I just say that I love this this new direction?
Of?
Just the four-letter word stuff and the idea that we're going to do live shows eventually. And I feel like we've accidentally tripped onto something that I'm really excited about.
Yeah, last week was... I mean, it was really good.
Yeah.
The quality of the post and I think the feel of it, and it just is very exciting. And I think our storytellers are excited too. They've been submitting some really excellent stuff.
Cool. So on this episode, we play a game of two truths and a lie with the whole gang, and we'll chat with Rebel Storyteller Laura Buffington, who had a very powerful piece this week. But before we jump into the podcast, how was your weekend?
My weekend was good. It was a bit stressful. My wife and I had her three nieces and nephews in town, which is fun, but we don't have any kids, and so having kids around is a lot of work, I'm realizing. My back hurts. I haven't slept very much.
How old are they?
Junior high, so like 12, 13, 14, which we all know is the best time in life. Our self-confidence is skyrocketing.
Yep.
We are not awkward at all.
I was so not awkward.
Yes. When did you become awkward? Was that in your 20s, 30s?
No, I was crazy awkward back then.
Yeah, I think we all were. So, I mean, they're great, and it was a lot of fun, but it's just so much work. And I was showering yesterday, and, like, I literally almost had to sit down because my back hurt so much. We were playing tag in the park and dodgeball in the park, and it was something. But the bright note was that on Sunday morning, we took them to Holtman's Donuts.
Ooh, a delicious note.
It was quite delicious. It was actually, I'm a little embarrassed to say, it was the first time I've been to Holtman's. Their donuts are like scary tasty.
I haven't had the bacon one. Did you try that one?
We did get the bacon one. We had it on the blueberry cake donut. So a lot of blueberry there, but... I got the chocolate cake. We had one with sprinkles. We got a dozen, and then everyone just sort of split and took a little bit of everything.
Yeah. You should have called me for some extra insulin after that one.
There were, when you have three teenagers, almost teenagers, and two adults who really like donuts, there were no leftover donuts.
Yeah.
So it was good. And your week? Your weekend?
My weekend was good. Sunday, we went to IKEA, which... usually is a horrible idea, and I tend to avoid it like it's the Swedish plague.
Yeah? Is there such a thing?
Yes, it's that place with 8 million people shopping for cheap furniture. But this time, somehow we cheated the system. We went in and skipped walking through the giant maze and just went straight to the bottom floor. And basically, Henry, my toddler, and I, we just rode on the carts the entire time down those super long... aisles, and it was it was kind of great, actually. I think I would go back and just do that if I didn't have to wait in line and buy anything.
I feel like you're probably not allowed to do that. That would destroy the IKEA business model if people just came in and rode around in carts.
Destroy seems like kind of a strong word.
Well, normally businesses, they're built on selling items.
I'd buy some meatballs. I think they let us eat meatballs and ride carts around?
Yeah, I think that might be the actual catch. It's in order to just ride around on carts.
I have to buy meatballs.
You have to buy meatballs.
I'm in.
All right.
That'd be a pretty cheap amusement park. So you ready to jump into this podcast?
Yeah.
So the first segment, we have the gang playing a game of two truths and a lie. Isaac, Joe, and Steve. That's you.
That's me.
You guys each share a story about a poster that you had in your childhood rooms, and one of you is lying, and Mark has to guess which one. Isaac kicks things off.
Okay, so growing up, I actually, in my bedroom, had a poster of Shania Twain on the wall.
Wow. Why?
Well, she's hot. She's Canadian.
Is she really?
She actually is, yeah. I like that combination. I like hot Canadians.
So did you have Alanis Morissette on your walls as well?
No, she's Canadian.
Yeah. Fairly hot.
Name three attractive Canadians, Isaac. Go.
Alex Trebek. I'll get you started. There you go. John Candy. Is Ellen Page Canadian?
She's from Alaska.
She should be.
Okay, so the poster you had hanging up was Shania Twain.
Shania Twain.
From a certain album, or...
Whatever the first one was, she had the midriff thing. It was a big controversy in country music. She's the first female country music artist to expose midriff.
Where in your bedroom was this poster?
On a wall.
understand that there might be four of them. How many walls? Where was it?
I can't remember now which wall it was on. For a little while, I had the...
Is there more follow-up questions? Are we going to say
it? Looks like we're going there.
We're going there.
Maybe he can get one question per...
One follow-up question?
Okay.
I asked where it was.
Yeah, I think for a while my room had this beautiful wood paneling on one wall. And I'm trying to remember now if Shania was on the wood-paneled wall or if whether she was on the opposite wall closer to Dan Marino.
Perhaps on the ceiling?
No, not on the ceiling. That's where I like to keep up. My poster of Emmanuel Lewis.
Is it Webster?
All right, this is getting cut out.
All right, Joe.
Poster, this is either a truth or a lie, Mark.
Thanks, Joe.
Repeating we're breaking the game. Our rules.
As you know, I'm into beef. Different cuts of meat.
Sure.
Sure.
And as a child, as a preteen,
the giggling thing is going very well that we talked about earlier.
I had a poster of a cow, a diagram of a cow that had little dotted lines and the different cuts of meat. So it would show the fillet, the shank, and whatnot.
That's my favorite kind of meat, the whatnots.
It's delicious.
This is even funnier if you've ever seen a picture of adolescent Joey.
What color?
Brown.
Besides the cow was on the poster.
It was all brown with a white lettering.
Okay.
All right. There's our follow-up question. And Steve, last one goes to you.
Okay. When I was a small child, I was a fan of a television show called Knight Rider. I love Knight Rider. To this day, if it's ever still on television, I try to find Knight Rider. And even though Hasselhoff has become sort of a urban legend at this point and people sort of mock him, huge David Hasselhoff fan when I was a kid. And so I actually had a poster of David Hasselhoff on my wall as a child.
What was David Hasselhoff doing in the poster?
I think Kit, the car, was behind him and he was sort of sitting on the hood and just kind of crossing his arms and looking dapper and amazing as chest, David is.
Chest hair?
No, he had on the... He always wore like a black leather jacket in the show, and so he was sort of wearing that little uniform that he wore in the show.
All right, okay. So there we have it. We have Shania Twain's belly button. We have shanks of meat and the Knight Rider himself.
Which is kind of like shanks
right.
of meat,
exactly.
Yeah.
Which one?
Different shades of Shanks of Beans.
Two truths and a lie. Who's telling the lie out of these three?
I'm gonna go with Steve telling the lie.
Why do you say Steve?
He looked kind of shifty when he was telling me about the poster.
He always looks shifty, so that's...
Wow.
What about these two maybe made you believe them?
Well, knowing Isaac a little bit more, I figured Shania Twain could have been an option.
Mark knows I love hot Canadians.
Or maybe he shared his room with his sister, and maybe his sister had Shania Twain.
About Joe?
Joe, maybe something random where he put up a little poster of a cow for some other reason. Maybe, I'm not quite sure. Your dad might have been a butcher. I'm not sure.
Because I know who lied, and I kind of feel like maybe one of them screwed up the rules. Because it feels like there's two lies in this group right now.
Oh.
But the only one I believe is Isaac.
Yeah, I was pretty solid on Isaac's, because...
I can't understand why... I can't understand why Joe had Shanks of Meat on his wall. Can you explain?
Yeah. That's the truth.
Yeah, for the record...
Yeah, for Steve. The record, Steve is the liar. You're wow. good at... You're
good job,
at
Mark.
Crime scene investigation.
I feel like I did a really good job with that.
I believed you.
Thank you. Ish. And you knew I was lying.
Yeah.
I will just say that I've been hilarious, a very funny person since I was a little kid.
Is and it still part of the lie? Because.
For those of you who don't know, I'm a professionally trained comedian.
Oh, boy.
And,
Joe.
Did that as a job for several years, just six nights a week. And I saw that poster at a Spencer's. And it seemed funny, and I thought this will make me funnier, and it will pay off when I'm 41 years old. Boom.
Well, that was fun.
Yeah, I liked it. I did not have David Hasselhoff on my wall as a child. There was a strict no David Hasselhoff rule in my household.
Aubrey wasn't into the Hoff?
No, he didn't care for the Hoff too much. I did actually love Knight Rider, though. Sure. I watched that show religiously, and... I was more of a sports family, so I had to have Jordan and Boomer Esiason and those kind of guys on my wall.
So you could have hairy chests on your wall if they were in sports uniforms, but not like leather jackets.
Right. If Boomer Esiason had a hairy chest, and I'm guessing he didn't.
I'm going to say no hairy chest for Boomer.
He seems pretty smooth to me. Like, but if he would have, my dad would have been fine with that, but no Hasselhoff. You were telling me about some of your favorites from the week as well.
Yeah.
Anything that stood out for you?
Probably the one that maybe made me feel the most was Laura's. And she just wrote what I thought was a beautiful poem about her sister. And she actually lives and works just right up the road in Dayton. And so it seemed like a no-brainer to bring her in and have her read the poem and kind of reflect on it. And so let's hear from Laura. Well, hi, Laura. Welcome. Thanks for coming into the Rebel Storytellers podcast studio.
Thanks for having me.
Which is really just our edit bay with some foam on the walls. But why don't you tell our listeners just a little bit about yourself, where you're from, where you work, all of that.
Yeah, I am a pastor at Southbrook Christian Church near Dayton, Ohio. And I also make my way down to Cincinnati once in a while to try my hand at teaching over at CCU.
Cool. And this is your first year doing that, right?
It is. And so far, I think I might be learning more than anybody else.
Well, Laura, I appreciated your poem that you wrote this past week for Rebel Storytellers. And I guess, could we just start with you reading the poem and then we'll just chat about it? Does that sound okay?
Yep. There are moments in November when the old loss becomes new again. Like someone arranged the calendar to say, meet with grief today. Remember the day her heart stopped beating. Remember the day yours somehow kept going. Suddenly we were a home divided, with some of us grieving around a table, and her laughing somewhere around another. Every November since, I think of how I tried to sing like her, laugh like her, love my friends like her, how I will someday likely suffer like her, and I will know how to go bravely because of her. And every year when the gray skies meet the every-colored leaves, I wonder if we are next to nothing or everything. If it matters we are here, if we will really meet her in a there. And yet, I remember, wherever we are, it is home while it lasts.
Laura, it was pretty obvious the first time I read the poem and then even hearing you read it right now, just how special your sister was. It sounds like to you, but not just to you, but also to the people that she knew, the people around her. As I read the poem when I was first reading it on the site, the first thought that came to my mind was I wanted to know more about Chris. Would you mind just telling us a little bit about Chris, what your sister was like, what type of person she was?
Yeah, she's a hard person to contain in description, I think. She kind of had a larger-than-life personality from the time she was a little kid. There are some funny stories in our family of her wrangling all the kids in the cafeteria to take the inside of their Twinkie and make mustaches. She once got busted for climbing the telephone pole outside of her school. She was 9 years older than me. She was fun and creative, and she wrote music. And from the time I was a little kid, I remember we just followed her around when she would make bands, and they'd play music wherever they could get anybody to listen to them. So she was always kind of strumming her guitar and writing music. She was the kind of person who she tended to love and migrate to the people nobody else really paid attention to. So she had a lot of kind of characters that were a part of her life that she loved that everybody else kind of missed the beauty of them, I think. But was part of what made her her. So she was a worship leader, so she also had a really strong, dynamic faith and liked kind of taking other people along with her in that.
And even hearing you now, and I think it comes through in the poem too, you can tell that she had a big effect on your life. Can you talk a little bit about how her presence in your life has sort of shaped who you are now?
Yeah, I think, for one, just kind of watching her always making stuff, you know, like that. If she had downtime, she was creating something. She was strumming. She was out on the back porch just staring at trees and trying to make music. And so I think that was a big part of why I wanted to do things that were creative and to kind of always seek out that part of what it means to be a person. And I think the faith part was definitely a big part of it, is watching her try to figure out how to honor God with her life and follow Jesus, and watching her and her friends kind of move in and out of our house, and just the joy she had was kind of evident, particularly when she was diagnosed with cancer. It was a big deal to watch her wrestle with that and to watch her navigate that with all the faith and the doubt that it brings. So particularly through those years, I think she gave me a picture of faith that I can't really let go of. So
you mentioned watching her wrestle with that, and we were talking about this a little bit earlier off air, but one of the things that I have so much trouble with my own spiritual walk is looking around the world and seeing people suffer, diseases, sadness, and it often leaves me skeptical and questioning how a God lets this happen, why he lets this happen, especially if he's a loving God. What's that been like for you to have known your sister, see her go through the cancer, but then come out the other end with faith in God? Can you talk a little bit about that journey?
Yeah. She was actually diagnosed my last year in seminary. So in seminary for me was kind of a faith crisis. It raised all kinds of questions without good answers, but that was exactly what I wanted it to be. It was a good time for questioning. So I go from all this talk of who God is and how God works and what prayer means and into this very real situation with all my answers kind of torn apart. So I don't have answers for why it all happened. I just kind of gave up on that. But I think I learned from her, you either live like this is true or you don't. It's not that you know for sure, but it's that you either live like it's true or not. And I think for her, whatever, you know, every time we'd go to the doctor, she'd go, you know, we never got good news. Like, it was always the cancer was progressive. We never got good news. So every time it was kind of a hit. But she never doubted that whatever happened, she never doubted that God was for her. Which I think we tend to attach that to good things happening to us. So like if something good happens to me, that means God's on my side. And that was just not her picture of God. I always think of Frederick Buechner talks about this a lot, like how the only thing God really promises us is presence, like that God is with us. And I think we tend to think it should translate to prosperity and health and good things. But what if it just means we always know that God is for us and that God wants good things for us, even in the middle of a world that is broken and diseased? And so I think kind of watching her take this on personally, that she wasn't talking abstractly about suffering. She was talking about this thing inside of her that was killing her, and she still believed God loved her and was for her. And so for me, I don't try to answer things very often anymore. I just kind of trust that those big things are true, that God is for us and God does want good things for us and for the world, and then maybe someday they will be like God wants them to be.
You mentioned to us off air that as we were asking the process that you came about writing this poem, that you started with two lines and you kind of went from there. I maybe could assume they were the first two lines of the poem, but could you let us know what those two lines were and then sort of what the process looked like to write this poem about your sister?
I don't really write poetry very often. I'm more like I write messages for church. I write essays for articles or whatever, where there's a lot of structure involved and where you kind of know where you're going when you start. Like I usually have an outline. So what I like about poetry is just once in a while when I try it, it's always kind of surprising. So you kind of just start down a path and see connections as you go and make it up as you go. At least that's how I do it. It's very kind of messy and random. So with this, as soon as you guys asked us to write about home and I realized it was November, I was like, I don't know what else I could write about other than this. So the two lines I started with, just the one is the line "and yet," which is actually a song my sister wrote when she was diagnosed. She wrote a song called "And Yet," and the whole point of the song was, here I am in this dark place and yet I will praise God. So kind of very much in line with some of the Psalms. But it was very personal for her. Here I am with this suffering going on, and yet I'm going to praise you. So I wanted to kind of put that line in there from her, just because it's kind of a way of life. And then the last line, "It is home while it lasts." I had in mind that that was kind of where I wanted to end. But everything along the way was kind of just surprising.
And that process of the lines or these memories just coming out and surprising you, like what did that feel like, A, from a creative standpoint, but B, just being Chris's sister and reflecting back on that stuff, like that sort of mix of emotions and discovery and nostalgia with excitement, like mm-hmm. What was that like?
I think when I first started, I sort of knew that it would be about I knew that it would be, I'd be writing about grief, and I'd be writing about the way that it just sort of comes back and shows up sometimes seasonally, sometimes without warning or without a calendar. And then the more that I sort of started to write it, the more I realized it needed to have a little bit of her in it. Like it needed to be more personal. So as I was kind of sitting with the paper, scribbling things, it was like, this needs to, you need to say who she was and who she was to you to really make this kind of work. So I started that line about how I grew up trying to sing like her, which is totally true. Like I would sit in my room and kind of try to sing like her. I also tried to sing like Whitney Houston several times.
How'd that work out?
My sister knocked on the door one time as I was trying to sing like Whitney Houston and said, don't do that. Stop that.
Could you give us a little bit of that right now?
No, I can't. I won't do that at all. So I thought, okay, I can't. I actually think I could sing at least maybe a little like Whitney more than she thought. But so I thought, well, no, what I'm really trying to do is, hey, I saw my sister do this, so I'm trying to do it. So it started with this kind of fun thing, like has a tribute to, like I tried to sing like her. And then as I thought about it, I was like, man, that's how it is with kind of older siblings, right? You kind of mimic them, you follow them, you do things that you don't even recognize that you're doing it, like your siblings. And then I started to think about how deeply that goes for me, because it really is when I have that day where I go, and this is such a downer of a podcast, I realize, but if you have that day where you go, I'm really gonna die. Like, I think you spend a lot of your life kind of in denial of that, and then every once in a while it kind of hits you, no, seriously, I won't be the one person exempt from this. And so I do sort of think she went first in that, you know, that I will know what that should look like because I saw her. And so I got sort of surprised by that kind of as I went along, that here I was just thinking it needs to be a little bit about her and me trying to be like her. And then I realized that will be my whole life. Like, whenever I have to face suffering, I'll know how to do it because I saw her do it.
I think that interview was probably one of my favorite things we've done. You know, sometimes we, especially on the podcast, if you listen last week or some of the stuff today, we goof around and have fun and make some jokes and that. But one of the main things that we want to accomplish through Rebel Storytellers is sparking hope and action, getting people unstuck, helping them find something bigger and better in life. And hearing Laura talk about her sister, their relationship, I just thought it was really powerful stuff. So what's happening at Rebel Storytellers, you're going to get some of the goofy stuff. You're going to get some more of the serious stuff. But we're really, really excited about this month of home. And so we invite you guys to follow along. There's 5 posts from last week, the first week of November, to get caught up on. And if you're just now jumping in, there'll be 5 more this week and then on and on till the end of the month. And then December, we're going to start all over again with a new word and get some more posts from people. So check that out. It's at rebelstorytellers.com. Go to that main page, and there's sort of a collage of photographs that each lead to one of the different posts. And so just click on any of those that catch your eye, read through all of them. Leave comments, let people know what you're thinking about the different posts. Let the authors know how the posts have affected you. And follow us on Twitter, at Rebel Storytellers, that's at RBL Storytellers. And you can get some updates about all the stuff we're doing over at Rebel Storytellers as well.
Yeah, and ultimately what we're trying to do is just create a community. And we're trying to kind of spur each other on to just make stuff and do stuff with our life and kind of get past the maybe embryonic state that we're currently in. And a big part of what we do also are live events. And the one coming up next is Genesis, and you can see more about that on the site as well. But I thought we'd end the podcast with just giving you maybe like a sneak peek taste. When we did Gospel of John this past April, Joe did a little bit from the book of Genesis, and so I thought we would just close today's podcast with him talking about Abraham and Sarah from those early stories. So give this a listen.
So we go all the way back to the story of Genesis again. And in that story, we have God calling a man named Abraham, who was an old man, and he had an old wife named Sarah. They were in their 80s and 90s when God called them. They didn't have any kids. They were barren. But God promises them that they're going to be a great nation, that if you could count their babies to come, that they would outnumber the sand of the seashore and the stars of the sky, that they're going to be a huge nation. But they don't have one single kid. Until one day, Sarah comes into Abraham's tent. Abraham, I'm late. That's exactly how it went down. And Abraham says, oh, you're always late. And she says, no, not that. And then they have a baby when they're really old, and they name the baby Isaac, because Isaac means laughter, and it's hilarious that these old people are having a baby.
Well, thanks for tuning in to our second podcast. Steve, I thought that went pretty well.
Really well.
We should do it again next week.
I thought I was particularly great.
You know, I'm gonna give you a grade of an A
plus.
A with two pluses.
Wow, that's good.
So, yeah, thanks for checking in, rebelstorytellers.com, and until next week.
See you guys.